Now we turn our attention to what this hour is about. This hour is about a conversation, as we're doing, with all of our candidates who are running for mayor for the city of Baltimore. So you get a chance to hear who they are, what they think, where they stand. I'm now about to talk with Patrick Gutierrez, who is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for mayor, former bank operations manager, former sports writer for The Sun, former a bunch of things, a father, and more. And Patrick, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
And you all can join us here. Please do, with your questions for this mayoral candidate. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. But do join us, 410-319-8888. We'd like to get those calls coming in and hear what you have to ask Mr. Gutierrez, who's running to become mayor of Baltimore. So let me start here. I mean, we just had a conversation with Doug Colbert, and we've been covering the Freddie Gray trials, and we've been covering before that the uprising that took place, and our producers were out there doing incredible work in the street night and day around this. And so I don't know where you were when this was all going on. You can describe that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're as mayor, what would you be your response?
Well, where I was when everything was happening, a couple of things. First, I had went to a police brutality forum that the Department of Justice had put on at Coppin State. And I was there, and for 2+ hours, I just heard heartbreaking story after heartbreaking story of residents, everyday people who have just been treated unfairly by the police. And when I went home that night, things really crystallized to me that, okay, you know, I've been talking about doing something like this for a long time, but that was the actual tipping point for me. That's what made me say, enough is enough. The city deserves better. We deserve better. I have the tools and the ability to be able to make some changes that can result in better experiences for people. And so that's when I decided to run. I was actually at a campaign training class that weekend down in Richmond, Virginia, over the weekend. And when we got home Sunday, that's when everything kind of started jumping off.
So when you say that nobody's responding to this in the way it should be responded to, what does that mean? So how would you respond to it any differently than other people are proposing or how the city has responded thus far?
Well, I think you have to look at the reasons why everything occurred, and it long-standing reasons that have been around for a long period of time, and it really starts with what I believe is ineffective leadership and poor day-to-day management from city government. In my career as an operations manager, I was able to go into a place and identify the strengths and weaknesses and get that operation running better. And everywhere I went, the root cause of the problem was always ineffective leadership, poor day-to-day management. And that manifests itself in so many different ways.
What does that mean in terms of this case? Poor day-to-day leadership and bad management. I mean, what does that mean?
So for the police department, okay, so officers have low morale. They don't believe that the system is fair for them. They don't believe they're communicated with properly, so they don't have the tools and resources to do their job. And then that spills over into the community. There's deep mistrust between the community and the police department, so you're not getting the effective results that you would like to see from either side. And that just tends to manifest itself and snowball and build into something until it erupts.
So what can a mayor do?
In
reality, here we have – as we talk about in this program a great deal, that half the people in this city live in poverty,
right?
Not the 25% that we talk about, who are home insecure, 99,000 families trying to get into public housing or in public housing, not sure how they're going to pay their rent. So how does a mayor respond to that?
Well, there are several things a mayor can do, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running is because I see a lot of opportunities that are currently not being taken advantage of. For example, the mayor sets the bar for how the whole city is going to be. And I think we've set a very low bar in terms of what we come to expect from City Hall, from the delivery of city services. When you look at situations where people are living in poverty, what's being done to address it? What's the strategic plan? So what I can do as mayor is develop an actual strategic plan on how we're going to start addressing these issues, reorganize the city so that it's, currently 2015, we should be running the city more so that way, taking advantage of technology, taking advantage of resources. And when you do all those things, you're going to free up a lot of money and a lot of manpower to be able to put into those systemic issues that just continue to plague the city over and over.
Could you give me an example of what that means? I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I don't understand how – understand we're in the 21st century and the use of technology is going to help us get out of the major problems we have of underemployment, unemployment, low employment in terms of people's wages, the housing stock in the city, what's happening in people's neighborhoods, the state of the schools. How is any of that going to help?
Well, I'll give you an example with the public housing situation.
I was going to ask you about that.
So in my world, you teach your managers and your leaders to MBWA, manage by walking around. So you get out of your desk and you engage with the people who you're supposed to be serving. So in the housing case, I would encourage or demand actually that our managers were having staff meetings at the locations where the residents are so that they can be constantly interacting with them, getting to know them, building those relationships. And when you're doing those little things, a situation like this doesn't go unnoticed and ignored for so long until it finally erupts into a big thing. So what we try to do is be proactive instead of reactive. I've seen a lot of reactiveness in the city, but very little proactiveness. And if you can put steps in place, like with the after action report, after the uprising, most of those things were preventable. You know, the federal government gave an operations plan. So it's up to the city to make sure that plan was implemented. It wasn't. Instead, they went with their own modified plan, making sure that all the officers are aware of what each term means. I mean, that's just paying attention to detail, doing quarterly checks, making sure and follow-ups. You know, if they don't know what something means and they're all doing something different when you issue a command, we see the results of what that happens. So really, it all comes back to better day-to-day management, more effective communication, and making sure that everybody is doing the job that they're expected to do, because we have a lot of people in these roles who are supposed to be doing the job and they're not. And so someone like me comes in and gets people motivated, gets them inspired, gives them the tools, the training, the resources they need to do their best work, and then lets them do it.
Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Pardon me. We're talking with Patrick Gutierrez, who's running to become mayor of Baltimore in the Democratic primary. Your ideas, your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. This is your chance to talk to the candidates as we have them all on one by one. I'll have more folks on next week as well, 410-319-8888. But that does beg the question about why you decided to run. I remember that when I saw your name in the paper, it was Patrick Gutierrez, the 13th person to declare a candidacy for mayor. So there are 13 people running. Mm-hmm. Other people have kind of the lion's share of the news because they're known. I mean, they're known by the community. The others, four others who are in first, second, third, and fourth place right now in terms of the last poll. And so I guess curiosity about why somebody with not the money that they have or the money they've able to raise doesn't have name recognition in this town, runs.
Well, there are several factors that went into that decision. Number one is I truly believe in talking with people all across the city that we've reached a breaking point. People have just finally had enough. I mean, there's always been this discontent about the way city government is, and you can't fight City Hall, and it takes 2 years to get a tree planted and whatnot. But people have always just kind of accepted that. Well, now in 2015, people have really had enough and they are ready for somebody new to just come in and take us in a completely different direction. I've had the opportunity to interact with residents from all across the city, people rich, poor, young, old, black, white, and the response has just generally been the same. You know, we want a different outcome. And they realize that in order to do that, we need to make some different choices. So when you add that up, when you factor in that in 2016, it's going to be synced up with the presidential election. So we think a lot more people are going to be coming out to vote who maybe otherwise wouldn't. And those folks are going to be more inclined for change as well. We think that we have a good shot to be able to capture that sentiment.
But how do you get with not the kind of financial resources others have? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you get your message out? I mean, I know you're here. That's great. But I mean, how do you get your message out?
It's a classic grassroots campaign. You know, we are engaging with people all around the city. Word of mouth is very strong. When I talk to people, you know, more often than not, they're like, OK, yeah, I've heard of you. And we're getting that message out. And the key for us is really to just let people know, you know, that I'm out there. Here's what I bring to the table. You know, I'm genuine. I think people are getting that, you know, from me everywhere I go. I'm very passionate about this city and the people who live here. I'm very hardworking, and I get results. And as long as people are aware that, you know, that that's my platform and that's what I plan to do, then on April 26th, you know, they'll make the decision that they think is best for the city, and, you know, we're prepared to accept that. But we believe that we have the way to move the city forward, and it really just starts with better leadership and day-to-day management. You know, I can't stress that enough. It's one thing to have a program in place, but if you're not following up to make sure that people are utilizing the program, then it's worthless. I was at a neighborhood association meeting, and the police officer was talking about this great program they're doing in Kansas City, where they're turning on their police lights when they're patrolling neighborhoods, and then the lights are flashing off buildings, and that's reducing crime. So he's like, so we're telling our officers to do that here. And I'm like, okay, well, but are you following up with them to make sure they're doing it? No. Okay, what's the consequence if they don't do it? Nothing. Well, what's the reward if they do it? You know. So, I mean, it's not just what needs to be done. It's making sure that it's executed. That's the difference that I bring to the table. That's what people are recognizing when they talk to me, because everybody has a lot of great ideas, but it's really about how to get those ideas executed.
So, folks, what questions do you have for Patrick Gutierrez? He's running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Dennis on line one. Welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Hey, Dennis.
Welcome. Yes, we can.
Yeah, as you stated earlier about how the city is suffering in a lot of different areas, and I want to, my opinion is that a lot of why the city is suffering is because the city's not doing well economically in terms of bringing more opportunities for the residents to work, more opportunities for companies to bring their businesses here. And I think my opinion is that if that were addressed, a lot of other things would sort of fall in place. And so I wanted to hear the candidate's ideas about how you would bring more economic opportunities to the city residents, to companies wanting to do business in Baltimore.
Good question.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your question, Dennis. So by running the city competently, efficiently, and with the people's best interests in mind, we're going to signal to potential employers and developers and the state that we have our financial house in order and are therefore worthy of further investment. You know, we've been lobbying legislators in Annapolis to increase funding for Baltimore City. And while they may not say it publicly, what we hear more often than not is, why are we going to give more money when you're not financially, you know, your house isn't in order? You know, we haven't had audits in the city for 25 years. We're constantly seeing situations where money is being wasted, where it doesn't have to be. And those are the things that make people think twice before they choose to come to Baltimore and set up shop. And when we reverse that trend and we're able to show people that we do have our financial house in order, then more employers are going to go, okay, well, that's a place that I want to do business in. And the state's going to say, okay, well, they deserve more investment.
So let's take some real specifics here. I mean, there was an article in the city paper recently on the housing department and the $150 million surplus they had. Over different times, mm-hmm. $35 million spent to pay off part of a loan, and they to pay back. Some people say they didn't have to pay back at that moment. You have all these people in the city who are with 3,000 people every night who are homeless in this city, with people not having on waiting lists to get into any housing in Baltimore. So, what's your analysis of what you do with the money that is there? We always hear that people can't, the mayor says and the commissioner says there's little they can do because they don't have the money. So I'm curious. So I would imagine as somebody who's running to be the mayor of Baltimore that you must have read up on this and understand mm-hmm. what's happening. So what's your approach to it?
Well, to use the money that we have available to make the improvements that the people have clearly been in need of for many years. You know, when it comes to like the public housing and the situation with the repairs, you know, if we have the money available, why aren't we using it? That's the key question we need to be asking. When the city gives capital to neighborhoods and they insist that the city has to be the one to do the work, You know, that's a problem for me. You know, I was at a park the other day, and they had trash cans ready to install, but they had to wait 7 months for the city to come and install the cement pads for them to go on, when they could have gotten somebody privately to be able to do it quicker and probably cheaper. So it really comes back to just looking at the entire every aspect of how the city operates and why, asking that question, why are we doing things this way? So when I read that we have, you know, all this money available for use and we're not using it, you know, someone needs to explain to me why that is, because it makes perfect sense to me that we have people out there able to do that job. We have the money able to pay them. We have the need. And where I come from, that seems like a simple solution. But in many cases, more often than not, it gets complicated. And I hear that from people. Well, it's complicated. It's complicated. It doesn't have to be complicated. It does not have to be that complicated.
Well, so let's take some of the specifics here. I mean, we're talking about they said ads peak $150 million, roughly half their operating budget was their surplus.
Right.
Used $35 million to improve its debt position instead. And they had this interesting list. They said that they could take that amount of money, the $35 million, that they paid for, that they went to kind of deal with the debt position. And if they took that money, it would house every homeless person for a year, $27 to $30 million, or move 3,000 families on a long waiting list for rental assistance, $33.7 million, or it would cover most of the agency's 2014 expenditures for repairs and rehab, $41 million. Mm-hmm. So the question is how we manage this money.
Right.
And again, I think to me, I'm curious about how you would manage who you're looking for to run that department and those departments, and what they would do differently. What would they do with that money instead?
Right. Well, we would take that money and go to our corporate partners and our community partners, develop a strategic plan for what exactly we want to accomplish over the next 10 years. And instead of just spreading the money around here and a little bit there, and then I liken it to just barely keeping yourself afloat. You know, that you don't ever get anywhere just by barely keeping yourself afloat. So we need to come up with a comprehensive strategic plan. Okay, what are we going to address? We're going to address homelessness. All right. So we take all of our nonprofits, we take the money that we have, we engage with our corporate partners, we develop a strategic plan and say, here is how we're going to eradicate homelessness in this city over the next 10 years. We look at models that have been effective in other parts of the country, like Housing First, where they're building complexes for people, getting them off the street, special, appliances that turn off after an hour. They're assigning them coordinators who live on site. They're giving them jobs to do for 1 to 2 hours a day so that they can start to earn a little bit of an income and get back on their feet. And the thing is, it's working and it's ending up costing the city less money than what they're doing, otherwise. So that to me is the most important thing, is to come up with a strategic plan that the experts agree on, and then getting everybody to work towards that plan instead of working in 200 different directions, because the way we're doing it now is not working.
Folks, 410-319-8888. Does what Patrick Gutierrez say at this moment make you think that do you want him to be your mayor, or do you have questions for him about why he wants to be mayor, what he plans to do? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. And our series of conversations is during the course of this year and beginning again next year with those who would be the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. So, going back to some of these questions that we'll hit in the next half an hour as well, when we look at housing in Baltimore, we have anywhere from 16 to 40,000 houses that are abandoned in the city. Mm-hmm. Some people wake up every morning and that's their neighborhood. Too much the city wakes up every morning to an abandoned house on either side of where they live, which is not where you want to raise your child, which is not where you want to have to live. So what do you do about that? I mean, this city, I say to our mayor all the time, and she gets upset when I say it, we look like a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
We look like Dresden after World War II. Mm-hmm. Like Japan after World War II. That when Eddie Conway, who was a former Black Panther who spent 43 years in prison, was released, one of the first things he said to me when he came out was, driving down North Avenue, he was flabbergasted by what the place looked like in 1970 when he went to prison and what it looks like in 2015, 14 when he got out of jail. Mm. So I don't see, quite frankly, you or anybody else with a plan about how to deal with that.
Well, the situation with the vacants demands a larger strategic plan. I keep going back to strategic plans because you can't just say, well, we're going to knock down this block and see what happens, or we're going to address it. We need a comprehensive plan to be able to address the vacancies. There are several things we can do that plan would involve. People are looking for jobs. They're looking for work. So we can use the vacants as an opportunity to train people on rehabbing vacants and then give them the work to be able to rehab them. And then when they're done, we can use them to house folks. We can give them to nonprofits.
Who's going to do the rehabbing?
The workers who have been trained. Yeah. The workers, the people who are living in the city, who are looking for jobs, who are in need of job training. So we have a comprehensive effort to train people on how to, do the construction and the demolition and electrical and everything else that goes into rehabbing a house. And then we put those folks to work. So we're killing two birds with one stone. At the same time, we can also look to empower local nonprofits and small business entrepreneurs, give them opportunities to do something with those vacants and turn them around. But it can't just be a one-off situation here and there. It has to be something that's part of a larger plan, because we will be much more effective if all of our resources are put in the same direction.
We're talking with Patrick Gutierrez, who's running to become the Democratic nominee for mayor of the city of Baltimore, the April 26th primary. We have to take a very brief break and come back. Adib, Deirdre, Clarence, in that order. Stay with us. We're going to come to all your calls when we come back from this break. Stay with us as we talk with Patrick Gutierrez, running to be mayor of Baltimore. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeCube, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeCube, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeCube invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeCU, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We are here with Patrick Gutierrez, who is seeking to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore, running in the Democratic primary on April the 26th. Our number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk at steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do call in if you can, 410-319-8888. And Adib, on line one, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mark. Good morning.
Yes. As a young man, I'm interested in politics now because of my, position in life now. But I would ask you, in your quest to become mayor of Baltimore City, do you have relationships with, I'm a part of a special demographic in my eyes, who is the young black Muslim. So there's a lot of subgenres wrapped up in that. So I was wondering if you, Mr. Gutierrez, have any plans to make alliances and move forward in getting closer to that community, especially in light of the world politics and basically that. So I'll just hang up and listen to your answer. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Adib.
Yes, thank you for your question, Adib. I recently attended a candidate forum put on by the Maryland Muslim Council, and I think it's very important that the next mayor be a uniter, not a divider, because we see too many instances where groups are just pitted against each other in this city, and it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. I mean, the young Muslims want a better Baltimore just as much as any other group, and so I think it's important that we harness everybody's desire for a better Baltimore and channel it in the right direction, and we're all working on the same page. So I don't approach this job. I've never approached any operation that I've been in charge of with any preconceived notions of anybody or anything. I take on the role. I get in there. I see what's what. I make the changes based on what's in the best interest of the people I'm there to serve. And yourself and the young Muslims are certainly, included in that group. And we just need to start thinking more globally about how we're going to connect people in the city in the 21st century, because it continues to get more diverse every day, not just from an ethnic perspective, but from a religious perspective and a socioeconomic perspective. And that diversity can be a good thing when it's harnessed and channeled in the right direction, but it can prove to be very divisive if it's not. So the next mayor definitely needs to have that that ability to do that, and that's something I've always been very successful in doing.
So I have a question about the device. I'm going to go to the phones first about this divisive world we do live in. But what would you say as mayor, just to follow up, Deirdre, we're going to come to your call next. So what do you say to people like Adib and others who are not Muslim about the Islamophobia that's taking hold in this country right now, about the attacks on Muslims, about the battle between the governor and the president and the governor and the mayor over whether or not we take Syrian and Afghan mm-hmm. refugees in the city?
Well, I mean, I think that is par for the course for the people who want to promote fear and mistrust amongst groups because certain people tend to benefit from things like that. But at the end of the day, when you strip away all of the, you know, the headlines and you just get down to it, I mean, people are people. We're all trying to reach the top of the mountain. We're all looking at it from a different perspective. But you know, on a one-to-one perspective, people are interacting with each other in this city on a daily basis, and those are positive interactions. People from different ethnic groups and socioeconomic backgrounds are just interacting with each other, and it's a very positive thing. Those are the things that just need to be promoted more so people are aware of that, and then it's a way to counteract what we see on the news every day and every night. So,
we're back to the phones at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Patrick Gutierrez, who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Deirdre, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning,
Patrick. Good morning, Deirdre.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I'm calling in reference to we advocate a clean Baltimore. And in that advocating, we have cut back on a two-day trash pickup. We have only a one-day trash pickup and a one-day recycle pickup. I'm calling to find out if you are mayor, will you implement that two-day trash pickup and one-day recycle as it used to be? I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Deirdre. Good question.
Yes, thank you for your question, Deirdre.
Nuts and bolts.
Yep. So one of the best things that I feel puts me in the best position to run the city is my operations management background. That allows me to go in to an operation, streamline it, get it running as efficiently as possible, and then that frees up a lot of money and a lot of resources to be able to do things like two-day trash pickup, which is absolutely a direction I'd like to head in. What I want to remind people is that Baltimore City government is a $2.9 billion operation with, you know, several thousand employees. That operation needs to be managed more efficiently, and it needs better leadership. And when we're able to do those things, you know, everywhere I've been, you know, we're able to improve productivity and save, you know, anywhere from, you know, 15, 20, 22%. But let's just say very conservatively, you know, all the tools that I have at my disposal and all the things I'm able to do to get the city running efficiently, let's just say that only results in 5% savings. That's still $500 million over a four-year term. Now imagine all the things we could do with $500 million and the additional manpower that we'll have freed up to be able to do those things. So, you know, that's two-day trash pickup. That's, you know, just so many. The possibilities are endless. And that's really what I'm bringing to the table is the opportunity to bring a more efficient city that will free up those resources and put them where they need to be to improve the day-to-day lives of the people who live here.
So getting down, before we go to the next caller here, do we have another caller? I'll get to the next caller in just a second. I wanted to – one question here popped up in my head when we talk about nuts and bolts. Before I get into questions of diversity and the city and race in the city with you and get to this next call, Dave, you're the next caller up. Potholes. So my assumption is that you seem like a guy who likes to study and read stuff. So – we looked at the city budget the other day when the mayor was coming on the show. Mm-hmm. We have, I think, a $27 million budget for road management. We have over 4,800 miles, if I have it right, of roads in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Only 700 get repaired. The pothole situation in Baltimore is absurd. I mean, and I harken back to the days of Mayor Schaefer and Mayor Schmoke when if the pothole was, they would fix it. Fill that hole. So what is the problem about why we can't have city streets that are smooth?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do about that? Maybe it's an impossibility in today's 21st century world and budget to have city streets that actually do not destroy your car as you're driving down them.
It's not an impossibility. And in fact, in many other cities across the country, that's exactly the kind of streets that they have. Those cities all have something in common that Baltimore City currently does not: effective leadership and strong day-to-day management of our financial resources and our people. It's about setting expectations, looking at the contractors that are performing the work, managing their performance to make sure that they're being productive. You know, if a job's scheduled to take 12 weeks, but everywhere else in the country, a similar job only takes 4 weeks. If a job here costs $200,000, but everywhere else in the country, it only costs $50,000. I mean, asphalt's asphalt. The markup can't be that much coming to Baltimore, but it seems that way. You know, when you look at who's getting the contracts, why they're getting the contracts, the process of awarding contracts, those are the things that need to be looked at and asked why. You know, and that's what I bring to the table, is that ability to look at every single aspect of the way the city does business and determine if that's really the most effective route. In a lot of cases, it's not, and it needs to be changed. And when we do that, you're going to see potholes get fixed, you know, much more rapidly. You're going to see more quality work. You're going to see contracts that are actually reasonable and market value instead of 2 and 3 times. Plus, we're coming back later for, you know, modified work orders. So, you know, a $14 million job ends up costing, you know, $25 million. And still isn't fixed. I'm talking about Dundalk Avenue. So, you know, all those things are preventable, you know, with strong leadership and better day-to-day management, where you're setting the expectation and you're holding people accountable for the job that they're being paid to do. All of those things are possible. And I would take it personally if I saw a pothole in my city and it wasn't fixed in a short period of time.
Mayors are supposed to take it personally. 410-319-8888. Dave, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. Thank you. Two questions, I guess. What would you do about the Graziano situation? Would you replace him? What would you do? And regarding Freddie Gray, what would you do to make sure we don't have another situation where someone is manhandled in a police wagon? Thank you very much.
Two good questions.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave, for your questions. So what was the first question?
The first question, what would you do about Paul Graziano and his leadership?
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody's in agreement that a change needs to be made. But what I want to talk about is why it happened and address those issues to make sure that it never happens again. So when you have a situation where you're not engaging with your managers and you're not aware of what they're doing and you're not aware of what their departments are doing, opportunities like this will continue to arise. It may not be in the housing department, but it may be in another department. So we need to work on making sure that we are being proactive, that we are in constant communication with the people, and making sure that their needs are being met so that those types of things don't sneak up and bite us in the rear end. So it's really not just about a knee-jerk reaction, oh, we need to get rid of this person or get rid of that person. It's looking at it from a process management standpoint and making sure that those types of things, that there are structured procedures and rules in place, and that those procedures are followed, and that there are consequences if they're not followed, to make sure that something like that just does not happen again, because that is inexcusable. And then the second question.
How do you prevent another Freddie Gray?
Well, you hold police officers accountable. You make sure that they're clear on what their expectation is. You make sure that they're clear on what's going to happen to them when they meet or exceed that expectation. You make sure that you're clear on what's going to happen to them when they don't meet that expectation. And then again, you follow through. I was reading an article about what was going on with the Chicago Police Department, and there had been, you know, 98% of civilian complaints resulted in zero disciplinary action of their officers. So you look at that in a vacuum and you think, wow, that's a horrendous number. And then you see the actual real tangible results of what something like that can lead to, you know, murder in the streets. Those are the types of things that are preventable if you are clearly communicating with your officers. And the thing is the police officers, they want the exact same thing that I'm talking about. In a 2013 poll of Baltimore police employees, they said they want clear and adequate communication. They want to be recognized for their efforts. They want accountability for poor performance. There's this misconception that you know, all officers are protecting the bad ones. Okay, the good officers don't want the bad ones on the force any more than you or I do. But they are not the ones who are in charge of making sure that that is addressed. It's the leadership that's making sure that's addressed. That's what's consistently being failed in the city, and that's what I intend to change.
Now, a lot of the activists, before we go, Art, you're our next caller up. We're going to come to you in just in a second, but to follow up on this particular call. Then, Art, you're on the air with Patrick Gutierrez. there are a lot of people who would say to you that the issue in the city, we talked about how divided the city is, and it is a divided city, black and white and by class, and black, white, and Latino and by class. It's a very divided town.
Sure.
And that part of the heart of the issue you see with the Black Lives Matter movement and people in Baltimore Block and the people who are out in the streets, the West Wednesdays from the West family, Tyrone West, who was killed in police custody, that the problem is systemic racism, that the problem runs really deep, that it is not just because every police officer, let's say the police issue, is a white racist, but because the enemy is seen as young black men walking down the street and people being targeted for all these kind of petty crimes and being put in jail. So how do you deal with that as a mayor? And what does a Patrick Gutierrez do?
Well, it requires a cultural shift, and the first thing that the mayor can do is lead by example. The second thing a mayor can do is take a look at all of the little instances of institutional racism that may be out there and start to address those things. For example, holding banks accountable to make sure that they are giving the same interest rates to African-Americans as they are to other people in similar neighborhoods, making sure insurance companies are giving the same rates to people regardless of their ethnic background. I point to an example of like the blue light cameras. Okay, why are there blue lights in surveillance cameras in poor neighborhoods? We have surveillance cameras everywhere in the city. We have them downtown, but there's no blue lights there. What's the reason for that? When I look at that, I think poor neighborhood, I don't want to go there. So what do you think the citizens who live there think about when they see the blue lights? And what's the reason for it? It's stigmatizing and there's no use for it. So when you look at things like that, little things that can have ripple effects on just how people feel about themselves and how people feel about who cares about them. I think the thing people want most from a mayor is to show that you're there and to show that you care. And if you can start by just doing those two things, then those are foundational building blocks that you can then start to look to in, you know, improving these conditions for folks. But really, the systemic racism that just yields itself in all these little different ways, it adds up. And it adds up at the end of the day to people just not feeling like this city is there for them. And then they end up, you know, doing the things that they do.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. We're talking to Patrick Gutierrez, who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Ott, on line two, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Mark?
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, I liked back during the day, B. Gaddy, when she was in the council, she adopted a bill on reparation. I would like to know his views on reparations for African descendants. I'll hang up and listen.
Do you remember what was in her bill, what she was pushing? Oh, that's gone. All right. So how do you feel about reparations?
You know, I read Ta-Nehisi Coates' article on that. It was very eye-opening.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, excuse me.
Okay. Ta-Nehisi Coates, yeah. It was very eye-opening, and I congratulate him on his award. You know, I tend to stay in my lane when it comes to, you know, the bigger issues in the government at large. My role is to come in as mayor, unite the city, get people working together, inspire people to want to build a better Baltimore. And in doing so, I think a lot of the things that reparations would address can be addressed organically in that fashion. So,
well, I mean, let's talk about what that means. I mean, I'm talking about what Atcha said, and I was thinking about that. I mean, so some people's overarching concept of reparations has to do with the fact that wealth was not in the hands of black America, but in the hands of mostly white America and wealthy white America, and that the economy of this country was built in large part on the enslavement of black people in America. So something has to address that. And part of what Freddie Gray lived in, where half the people of Baltimore live in, is a direct result of that exploitation and why so many people, especially so many black people in the city, are mired in poverty and stuck in neighborhoods where there's no hope and people turning inward on themselves and more. So that is a question that the mayor has to address.
Right. And I think by doing the things that a mayor has the power to do, and by doing them in a fashion that is addressing those needs, you know, that takes care of the issue at a local level. So if we start investing more money into entrepreneurship opportunities and small business opportunities for minorities, if we make sure that they have access to a quality education and safe neighborhoods, I mean, those are the outcomes that everybody's talking about, whether they label it as reparations or whether they label it as something else. People want to wake up every day to a safe neighborhood. They want to wake up every day to a neighborhood school that will educate their children and prepare them for the 21st century. And they want to wake up every day to job opportunities where they can have a productive life and be productive members of the community. Those are the goals. I think we're all working towards those goals. It's just a matter of how we execute those goals. And that's where I feel like I distinguish myself, is the ability to provide that strong leadership and that day-to-day management so that these issues are being addressed at the local level.
410-319-8888. Join us with we talk with Patrick Gutierrez. Kevin, you're on the air. Yes, welcome.
How you doing?
Good morning,
hey,
Kevin.
How you doing, Kevin?
All right, my question is,
You're breaking up, Kevin. Start again. You're real fuzzy. We couldn't hear you.
Question to you, what you plan on doing for African-American males as far as jobs in Baltimore City?
Well, one of the things I plan on doing, Kevin, is, you know, right now we're working towards, you know, ban the box, which is a good first step, but it needs to be taken a step further. For people who have arrests but no convictions, I believe it should not even be on the application whether or not you've been arrested before, because once you've made your way through the system and you're done with it, you should be able to resume your life just like anybody else. And that means being able to vote, and that means being able to get a job, and you shouldn't have to carry around a stigma of an arrest from, you know, years ago that didn't even result in a conviction. So that's, you know, one of the things that I plan to do. Another thing I plan to do is just massively expand career training education, not just for adults, but for children starting in the sixth grade, because we need to give our children as many opportunities to that productive life as possible. And the cookie cutter academic approach is not working for everybody in the city. The results clearly bear that out. We need to do some different things. And by expanding career training education, we can give people skills that they need. You know, my best friend for the last 31 years, he dropped out of high school. You know, he was not cut out for that academic life. And he started turning to petty crime. And, you know, this was back in California. And, you know, I moved him out here, and I'm like, look, you know, let's get you in a program. You'll start fresh. And at age 31, he got into a VOTEC program. He graduated, and now he's working for BGE. He owns his own home. He's brought his kids out here. They're getting enrolled in VOTEC programs. But the key with him is he had up until age 31 before he figured it out. Too many children in this city don't even get to age, you know, 16 before they've already made a choice that sent them down the wrong path. So we need to offer those same choices to kids at a younger age to keep them in school, keep them wanting to come to school, and make sure that they know that there is a light at the end of that tunnel, that the things that they're learning are going to translate into something tangible, into something real. It's going to translate into a better life for you and your family, and it really only takes one child from a family to break that cycle of poverty, because once that person gets out of it, then his or her kids are going to get out of it, and so forth.
So one of the things that around this issue has to do with TIFs and pilots, mm-hmm. and the money that is given to, like, the Patarakises and Beattie, Mr. Beattie, when they built the Exelon building in the East Harbor. One of the things I always push anybody on this, if we're going to be mayor, is if you bring a business to the city, what does it do to end poverty? What does it do to put poor people to work?
Right.
How do you make that become part of the equation without not just kind of willy-nilly giving out taxes in lieu of payments?
Yeah. Well, the first thing you do is recognize that the current way they're doing it is not working. So what we need to do is, you know, I'm fine with welcoming these big corporations and developing downtown and all of those things I think are all valuable. But at the same time, we need to ensure that those companies that are getting those tax breaks, that we're also asking them or mandating to them that they take a portion of that money and channel it into the neighborhoods that are not downtown. So it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. You know, if you want your $100 million tax break, you know, we're going to make it $75 million, and then $25 million we're going to send over to the neighborhoods that are not downtown so that they can get developed at the same time, so that they can get better roads and bicycle lanes and things of that nature.
What about hiring people in those facilities, hiring people in those businesses, hiring people in those hotels, mm-hmm. hiring people who are doing the actual construction work? I mean, that's...
Right. Well, and that's something that needs to be, you know, negotiated as well. You know, we need to invite people to come who are not just looking to make money off a project, but who are looking at the bigger picture of helping our city rebuild and grow. And if you have that mentality, then you're going to be free to commit to hiring X percent of people who live in the city. And if we put metrics to it and you put numbers behind it and then you hold people accountable to those numbers instead of just, you know, a gentleman's agreement, yes, we're going to hire in the city. No, I want something concrete. You know, I want you to commit to, you know, 50% of your jobs are going to come to people from the city, and also that you're going to invest in job training so that the people who don't currently have the skills have the opportunity to gain those skills and get put to work at the same time. So
let me go to a quick call here, 410-319-8888. Steve, you're on the air. Welcome. Good morning,
and,
Chief.
I'd like to say hello to your guests. My question to your guests is, what is his plans to address the health disparities in Baltimore City, especially chronic kidney disease, which is tearing our community apart? And I'll hang up and let you answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. My wife is a physician, so she's definitely going to appreciate that question. There's a short-term plan and there's a long-term plan. You know, we need to increase our education of not just our children, but their parents at the same time from day one to encourage those healthy eating habits and the things that they can do to prevent long-term illnesses from occurring, like kidney disease and diabetes and so forth. The other thing is we need to increase our mobile services, and that's where, you know, the additional money that I'll be able to free up can go to use at getting more mobile services to go into more communities more frequently, not just to provide the services, but again, to provide that education, because really the key is getting to folks as early as possible and getting them on the right path. I was at a candidate forum that focused on getting healthy food to more people. And the question came up, well, is it access or to the food, or is it education? And it's clearly education. You know, at our school, at my daughter's school, you know, we got the menu changed a couple years ago so that it would be, you know, more healthy greens and all these great things. And the parents were all high-fiving each other going, yeah, we did it, woo. Kids weren't eating it. It was going right in the trash, because they had not been conditioned to eat it as part of their everyday life. And it's the same thing with health. It needs to be conditioned from day one that living a healthy life involves getting out and exercising, involves eating right, and involves all these different components. I mean, the information's there, but it's not getting to the people. So, you know, if Muhammad won't come to the mountain, you bring the mountain to Muhammad. So, you know, as mayor, I want to be out in the communities. I mean, I know it may sound unrealistic, but I really do not have any intention of spending any time in my office during my four-year term. I want to be out in the communities day after day leading these efforts, because it makes so much more of a difference when the mayor himself shows up at these events and lets people know, we're there and we care. And so when we increase those services to people and increase the frequency and increase the education, we're going to see that domino effect and increased health in our citizens. And that's what we want.
I noticed on your website, but why don't you give some closing thoughts? We only have a few minutes left. I'll let you have that. So why don't you give a couple closing thoughts and let folks know how to find you and find your website and wherever your campaign headquarters are.
So our website is abetterbaltimore.org, and our Facebook page is Patrick Gutierrez for Mayor. We do have a song out called I Want a Better Baltimore. It's available on iTunes and Google Music and wherever music is sold. And, you know, if I leave here with one thing I want people to make sure of, is that we deserve a better city. We truly do. You know, you guys are out there day after day doing the right thing, you know, trying to do the right thing, trying to make a better life for yourselves, for your families and your communities. And what I've seen in my 16 years here is just a failure from City Hall to be able to match that effort and give you what you need to be successful. So if you're doing your part and City Hall's doing its part, we're going to see wildly different results. And you're just really going to get that wow factor. Like, wow, I can't believe I called 311 and 2 days later, you know, that pothole was fixed. So those are the things that I want people to recognize. You know, this is a job. You know, I was trained how to do the job. I wasn't trained how to campaign for the job. So the way we're approaching this is to us, it's not an election. It's a job interview. You know, and the people listening out there and the people voting, you're the hiring manager. If your car broke down and you had four politicians, a billionaire, an attorney, and a mechanic, who would you hire to fix your car? Well, our city's broken down. It needs better management. It needs better day-to-day leadership. So who do you want to hire? You know, I have a proven track record of success everywhere I've been, and it all starts with just making sure that everyone's clear on their expectations, giving them the tools, the training, and the resources they need to do a great job, recognizing and rewarding them when they do that great job, and then holding those accountable when they don't. So those are the things that I want people to know about me.
Patrick Gutierrez, thanks so much for joining us here on the Mark Steiner Show today.
Thank you for having us, Mark. It's been a great pleasure.
Good luck on the campaign trail.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us and calling in and making the show what it is and bringing your ideas to the airwaves. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Monifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. And to podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.